Hey there, welcome to What's the Truth. My name is Jessica Hoddle and I'm your host. Today we're addressing line number 28. I'll never get through this. You're listening to the What's the Truth podcast with me, Jessica Hoddle. I'm a number one bestselling author, wife, and coach. I refuse to let you keep believing the lies that are coming at you from every direction. Every week I'll speak truth, bring encouragement, and inspire you as I uncover the lies you may believe to be true about your life. Each episode is meant to challenge the way you think to change the way you live. Now, this is going to be a two-part series, and it's with my very own spiritual father, PJ McClure. If you have read any of my books, if you follow me for any length of time on Instagram, I'm at Jessica Hoddle, or Facebook, same thing, Jessica Hoddle, you will have known about PJ. I talk about him a lot, and over the past 7, 8, 9 years, we have worked together and he's been a part of my life. Now, what is so fun about this is that many people have heard about him, but this is actually our first time doing anything together. And this isn't as much of a Q&A as much as it is a deep dive into experiencing trauma, how to process through that. And he shares a lot about my own personal journey with him and who I was then to who I am now, but in relation to where you have practical takeaways. And he has some great analogies for you when experiencing emotions and things that you're going through. And I titled it, I'll Never Get Through This, because I can remember for many years of my life, especially in my 20s, just thinking, oh my gosh, here's something else and I'm never going to be able to get through this. We talk about relationships. We talk about family. We talk about just all kinds of things that we sometimes don't want to address. I know you're going to be blessed with PJ and listening to what he has to say, and you're going to get a very deep insider addition to my own story from his perspective, where it's a little bit hard to share on social media or hard to put in a book. And that's what I love about these two episodes. So I'm releasing part one this week and you'll get part two next week. All right, let's listen. Y'all, I'm so excited for you to hear this lie as my spiritual father and I talk about this lie that I'll never get through this. And when I was kind of praying and asking, and before I even started talking with PJ, it came to my mind about the lies I used to believe when I was working with him more in depth and very, some days, 4 to 5 hours, he'd be on the phone with me. And I just remember thinking all the time, I'm never going to be able to get through this emotionally and spiritually. What does it look like to be on the other side? And I just kept saying to myself, I'm never going to get through this. And so PJ was there through, I think, roughly 5 years of this journey with me of discovering who I was, walking it out with me. And so PJ, I'm so glad that you're here with me.
I couldn't be more thrilled to be here with you. This is kind of a cool perspective on the journey, or at least a leg of it. So yeah, this is cool.
It is cool because we were talking about it before, and you've been mentioned in all my books, and I often will reference you in Facebook Lives, like, oh yeah, my spiritual father. And people will sometimes kind of turn their head and be like, what's a spiritual father? So maybe we could obviously like address that even of what that looks like.
Yeah.
But you know, now it's after how many years, probably 8 or 9, that we're actually doing our first thing together. So people can actually see us together and, well, not see us, but hear us. And so can you actually just tell us what a spiritual father looks like for people that are like, what is that?
Yeah. And it's not a role that I think you can just assume. It's something that is very much a connection, and not really in a mystical kind of, you know, cloudy way, but in a very practical sense, what a spiritual father typically does is play the role of somebody that is willing to speak deeper truth into somebody than maybe another person in their life would be. And especially when you consider, and I'm not going to go too far afield on this, but when you consider the role of the mother and the father from a scriptural standpoint, and we can go more into that later, but the father has a very specific role. And the role of the father from an ancient scriptural standpoint all the way through is to provide strength to a family in a way that everybody has the ability to move around and do what they need to do. So it's an empowerment almost from a sense of being able to get out of the way and hold space for somebody to operate in their strength. And so not many of us have ever been schooled in how to do that for somebody else. And so it's no wonder that one of the biggest epidemics in our world is literal fatherlessness, but one of the unspoken epidemics is spiritual fatherlessness. Somebody that will hold that ground, that will be a strong structure, that will be a guide rail in a physical sense, but in a lesser sense than what somebody's personal intimate relationship with God the Father would be. So it's a practical relationship that is built completely in love and has a strength component to it that gives us the ability to, one, test ourselves and kind of come up against that guardrail moment, or to just be willing to be exhausted and lean into somebody. That in a nutshell is spiritual fatherhood in that regard. And like I said, it's not, you know, you don't get online and say, who can I hire to be my spiritual father? It doesn't work that way. There has to be a connection, but it's not as impractical or completely out of bounds as most people might think it is.
No, I'm glad that you said that, because just assuming you actually had spoken that you were taking the role, like it wasn't me just assuming, like, and me declaring everywhere on social media in my books that, like, oh, he's my spiritual father. You really stepped into that role and actually acknowledged it with your words and spoke it to me. So I knew that I had that permission to,
that was key. Yeah.
To just come in.
That permission is huge, especially with your background of not really having a strong man in your life in that regard, to, one, give you permission to not have to play that role for yourself, which is exactly what you were trying to do for, I don't know how many years before, I'm assuming nearly all of them.
Yeah.
Until we met and started working together. And it's permission to allow somebody else to fill a role that you're probably trying on your own, but unsuccessfully. And it's, you know, there's a reason we keep coming up against the same problems over and over in life. And it's because from a polarity standpoint, they're the places where we can get the most growth, and therefore they're the places we can have the most struggle. So if we're trying to fill every role in our life, it's going to be really, really hard to have success in any of them at the level you're capable of.
Yeah. Well, let's take them back though to how we met. Okay. Cause they're probably going to wonder, like, that sounds really great, but how did y'all meet? And
how on earth does this thing work?
Yeah. I was really young. I mean, I was 22, 23.
Two or three at least. Yeah. Fitness queen, going for it, doing your thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I was the second half, kind of the, I don't even know how to word it, but I was kind of the second half of a business journey that you were on at the time, learning to do a lot of marketing. A lot of the social media marketing was newer at that time. Happened to be hooked up with a person who, frankly, was just an absolute genius at being able to see it and read it and understand how those places were moving. And I came in and filled the mindset component of it. And that was really how we worked back and forth in that. And we touched tens, thousands of people with that model. And you happened to be one of them that rose to the top of kind of that coaching circle very quickly. And really the place where it took off was when we were both at a live event together, one of the smaller masterminds. I think it was at a B&B on some little lake in Indiana. or something. Yeah. Like, I forget exactly where it was, honestly, but that seemed right to me. And I think there were maybe like a half a dozen of you there.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right?
I think so.
And it was from that point on that it was really kind of a spot. There was a spot in, and people that have followed you or listened to you for a long time will find this funny, that you were stubborn and
very
kind of trying to fight a couple of the things that were being laid in front of you of, well, no, and I don't, and this won't, and I can't. And I had the opportunity, really, I mean, in the meeting itself, permission was granted. But really, without asking any permission or giving any apologies, I had to speak a very hard truth to you. And there were just, the walls of Jericho came tumbling down, and you nearly balled yourself into a heap.
Yeah.
Right there at that spot. Very strong still, but I mean, just going because something had happened.
Well, I don't like to show weakness. And if I show weakness, exactly, then that means that people are going to think less of me.
Yeah, take advantage of you and all of those things. We've got to be strong and powerful and, you know, stainless steel and all of those things. And that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
But the intimacy of that moment, being a small group and everybody there for the same reasons and all of that working, caused you to let some unknown bald guy in where nobody actually had tried to go before. And so that it was kind of that moment, and it was not long after that, maybe even while we were still there at the retreat, that you were like, okay, I have to hear more of this.
Mm.
You know, and it wasn't that I produced some insane wisdom or anything. It's just that part of my gifting is to be able to read people in moments. And it was being able to do that that really exposed the type of connection that we could have and the long-term relationship that that could lead into.
Mm-hmm.
And how that would work out really for both of us. Yeah. to be able to grow into that. So that was really the initial push into what became years of spiritual wrestling to really get after some issues, and honestly some things that weren't issues but had just never been dealt with before because you'd never had that relationship in place.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right about nobody, I don't think anybody's ever really challenged me intellectually at that point, because even the guys that I dated, they were not challenging me at all intellectually or spiritually, or I was always the one that made the money and had a bank account and, you know, the debit cards and like all the things.
Yeah.
And I think that almost every time we would talk on the phone, I think I would cry, because there's something about the father-daughter relationship that always just breaks me down, you know, and it's just that special spot that I never had for many years. And so when you come into the picture, it was like, okay, could this person really care about me first? You know, because I was always, if I don't take care of myself, then nobody is. And let's just say you did not change that very fast. Like that was probably it was years. So I think that, so we started talking, and then you had kind of went on a different business adventure. And I remember messaging you one day and just saying, can we still talk? Do you remember that? Like it was, we hadn't talked for a few months. I was like, I need you in my life. How can we do this? And I would love, you know, you said I was stubborn. When I think about that lie of, you know, I'll never get through this, can you remember some of the things that I was stubborn about that I was just like,
this? Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah.
Don't like, probably, you know, you were like, oh my gosh. Yes. Like you just,
well,
there's
no,
so many.
I mean,
that was funny.
Specific. It's very specific. It's not like you're just some kind of, you know, generic clone of everybody that's got problems.
Yeah.
Because we all do. It's just our own particular packaging of what it is that we have. And you've touched on a couple of the biggest pieces, and they're all interrelated in there. But the biggest one, and it just made me so proud to see you finally take off on it once you got a hold of it and start delivering it to others, was realizing where your worth stood, where it came from. because you're, and if they could see me doing air quotes, your strength, which was really just bullheadedness at the time. It was you, if I could, let me see, I've never tried to do this before, so I'm going to try to do it in the moment. Jessica was this huge mass of real, true strength, potential, intelligence, all of these things wrapped into this beautiful little petite form that then masked all of that with a stubbornness and a willfulness and just an unyielding nature that was not natural to her. That's who you were then. So everybody else in the world could see all these amazing innate qualities kind of underneath the surface, but it was very difficult to get to because even your smile was different then. Mm. Your smile said, I'm letting you know that I intend to be friendly, but don't push too hard. it was a little bit like that, you know, people say a dog smiles whenever you're walking up to a place that you're not supposed to be and it owns that. Mm-hmm. That was kind of your smile. It was a little closer to a warning than it was a welcome. Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing that I noticed changing. Mm-hmm. When as our relationship progressed, because it was, you were willing to reach back and use those innate strengths out front, but you weren't allowing them to just come through on their own. So you had somewhere had developed that your worth was on the outside.
Yeah.
It was extrinsic. It wasn't a part of you. It was something that you developed. Mm. And so it was just through steady, really just your willingness and then capturing at that moment. It was just this steady dose of, okay, so what would you do different in this case? All right, so how do you think that could be better? If we were to rehearse this and do it over, how would that work? If you, in just working through all of these different pieces that seemed probably hypothetical at the time, but were all going directly after smaller yet very, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Just impactful. That's not the word I want, but it's the one I'll use. Very impactful in events in your life that you continued to carry through, and your worth was based in your emotional view of those old events at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not valued in this, so I must need to do this. Mm-hmm. They didn't respond well to me here, so I must need to do this instead.
Yeah, change something.
And so it wasn't about working from who you were out. It was about you trying to create something on the outside and force it in. Mm-hmm. And it never worked. It never works for anybody to try to build this thing out here and force it into who we are, as opposed to simply, you know, the whole Michelangelo part of, I already know what it looks like. I just have to release it from the marble, you know, just a little chisel stroke at a time. That's the way that we last. But the issues of bringing those outside things in, those old perceptions, the old lies, and trying to force them in as reality to mold who you are instead of allowing yourself to come out into the places where you belong in whatever shape and form that is. Mm. So yeah. that was the biggest thing, that outside in piece.
I think it's really true. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to that. I think the more that I study even trauma in the body and understand, I think I was so disassociated with what I actually felt. So I couldn't even understand it. You know what I mean? I was just trying to, my external environment was trying to control how I felt internally.
Yes, and you were trying to create your external environment even at the same time. So mm-hmm. not only was it an external environment impacting how you responded and moved throughout the world, you wanted to be control freak enough to create the outside environment mm-hmm. because that was less painful and seemed more easily controlled than going in and dealing with the internal environment. Mm-hmm. It's that same old thing of whether you're the thermostat or the thermometer. You were working from the thermometer perspective going, okay, well, it says you know, 95 degrees. So I need to make everything on the inside respond to that 95 degrees.
Yeah.
It's an awkward thing. And you're saying that from a neuroscience standpoint. Let's hit something on that just real quick. One of the issues, and it's one of the reasons why I think that I find more of a niche working with women than I do with men in regard to this, because the, we'll just call it the wiring of the female brain is vastly different than the male brain. And it's much more intricately interwound. Both hemispheres are connected in such tight in multiple ways, just a multiplicity of different neural connections and how everything goes together. And so the processing is constant in the female brain. And to probably oversimplify it, but it's still true. The majority of the female processing we can see through a lot of the advanced imaging we have now runs through the emotional and linguistic centers of the brain. So everything, every memory has an emotional tag.
Yeah.
This is what this memory means. Mm-hmm. And then when that memory is activated or pulled out, all the same things come with it. The chemical reactions the same, everything is the same. The male brain is very compartmentalized. If you could think of the male mind like a huge warehouse full of boxes, but to operate best, he can only have one box open at a time and be totally focused on that box. You know, it's the same as sitting watching a television program, doesn't matter what it is, and you're talking to him at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You literally have to, me as a guy, when I learned this, my relationship with my wife got so much better. I literally stop and turn away from the TV. I'll mute it. I'll do whatever it is and look directly at her and ask her to repeat herself and be able to engage. I have to close that box to be able to open this other one. And so whenever you find a woman trying to compartmentalize the way a guy does, you find one, she starts over the course of time, starts shutting off some of her own innate abilities, because in order to compartmentalize, you can't allow the processing to run wild like it wants to. And you find her fighting against herself within that. And so instead of going back and reshaping those emotional tags that then allow her to function, because all of us have had, and keep in mind, this is not an all or nothing. This is not male, female. You know, it's on a continuum. Everybody falls somewhere on this continuum. But the bottom line is, whenever we're trying to push ourselves into a method of thinking that doesn't correspond with our neurological makeup, we find dissonance. It doesn't ring true. And that's where we start fighting ourselves. That's where we start trying to bring things into a place that we're just not meant to be. And it's not that you can't reshape the way you think, but you have to ask yourself, why am I trying to reshape the way I think?
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time we do it because we're trying to avoid a pain.
Yeah.
We'll do all kinds of stuff to avoid a pain. Whereas we'll only do a limited number of things to gain like a long-term peace. We'll do almost anything to avoid a short-term pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so watching you do some of those things of trying to compartmentalize pain and just set it up on the shelf, you know, and I'll deal with it on this 4-hour call with PJ coming up or whatever.
Gosh, it was so bad.
I'd have been at that time. It eventually, you were willing to kind of realize you didn't need the boxes. That's not how you work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think people understood.
I don't think people understood even like what I was dealing with behind the scenes. You know, even writing my books. And I'm always real and honest, which is why I love this, but you're kind of being even more like giving them even more insider, which is great. Of just when I say that, you know, we've grown or we grow or we look at the outside world. Cause for me, it's like, well, I even told you before, I'm like, I feel like I should be further along.
right.
even business, right? Like, I feel like I should really learn. But when I look at myself emotionally and spiritually, it's like, man, even just 6 months ago. But I mean, I always say this though. I don't think I would be where I am emotionally without you though.
Oh.
Because I think you're the first person that was helping me understand why I was thinking the way that I was thinking. Because, you know, for so long, you know, all the lies my mom would tell me and
right.
the things that were being said to me. And even as going to a Christian counselor, that didn't help because they just repeat things that you say and they don't know you on a personal level, or they can't really get to that level of personal because then it becomes, you know. And so you probably, I mean, just five years is, was opening my mind to that. And I don't think that I would be where I am, because now through all of our, probably all the questions that you've asked me was helping me now, even today, of just why am I feeling the way that I'm feeling and being yeah. willing to ask myself those deeper questions, because now I ask everybody else questions. And I think it's
because you've developed the skill set. And that's what it was. And I don't know if you remember the metaphor over and over, you'd be frustrated about something that it wasn't further along, or you hadn't completely gotten over this, or whatever it was. And the metaphor is always about the craftsman and the tools. You know, if you could walk up to somebody and hand them a chisel and a hammer, and if they're not skilled with those tools, what they're doing is going to be, they'll probably mess all kinds of things up. It'll be crude. It'll be rough. But you hand those exact same tools to somebody who has worked with them for an extended period of time. And if they're gifted also, there's a layer of that, then they can create something that is, you know, that lasts forever, something that's beautiful, something that moves the soul, all of these amazing things. And we get ticked off because we walk up and, you know, pick a couple rusty tools up out of the pile that we haven't used in years, and we can't do amazing things with them instantly.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time sometimes, and especially if you're piled on and there's tons of stuff around, you know, this pure little delicate piece of your soul that has just had, you know, has been beat upon and had garbage just piled up around it, you're not going to get to that right away.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not even healthy to get to it right away, because we still have to deal with the law of unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens whenever I fix this thing? Well, that means that something else opens up.
Yeah.
Whenever I want to teach this concept to like younger kids, we'll walk outside and I'll say, okay, within a 2-foot circle of where you're at, pick up the biggest rock. You know, we'll just be on sometimes you're just on a gravel road, you know, or a gravel parking lot, and they'll reach down and pick up the biggest rock. Okay, now holding that rock in your hand, look down there and tell me now what's the biggest rock. Oh, well, this one's the biggest now, and they'll pick it up. Now, how much bigger is that one than the other one? You know, and you hold them side by side, and it's not always obvious which one's biggest when you hold them side by side, but whenever one of them is removed from the situation, now the whole landscape looks different.
Mm.
You know, it's, you can't fix a hole in a blanket by cutting it out. You can't, you know, you can't judge your life by the biggest rock, because there'll always be a biggest rock.
Yeah.
And so we think, all right, well, I'm going to remove one. Well, dang it, there's a biggest rock now. Well, there'll always be one. It might be smaller than the last one. Typically it will be, but it's just difficult, especially when you're, and I hate this type A, type B thing, because people are so much more complex than this, but whenever you're that type A, hyper-driven, over the top, I have to achieve everything to prove who I am, like you were.
Mm-hmm.
You get mad just because there's still a rock.
And I have the tendency to go that way. I swing that way. I can swing that way pretty easy if I'm not careful, yeah. You know?
Well, a lot of us have a direction that we default to.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of our thing. People who don't have a direction that they default to, I'm not really sure what they're doing with their lives, because all of us have a direction we go.
Hmm.
There's nothing wrong with the direction you go. The issue is typically how dramatic it is.
Yeah.
You know, is it the difference between a rubber band snapping or just kind of pushing something over in a direction? And most of us have the tendency to be way more dramatic in our moves than are necessary.
Now, do you remember any big rocks in my life that I thought I'd never get through? Specifics?
Your mom was a huge one. Your dad was pretty dramatic.
I don't think people realize the depth of that. I mean, everybody has their own thing, but the behind the scenes it was a lot.
Well, and I mean, it was, and here's another challenge too that we faced in the middle of all this was that, and it was probably better knowing me, but the fact that we were, 800 miles apart?
Yeah.
So it was always on the phone.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was, a Zoom or something like that, where we had video. But more often than not, it was on the phone. And so, one, it was impossible for me to, put my arm around you and hug you and calm you down. Mm-hmm. You had to learn how to do that yourself, which was huge, because you weren't very fond of treating yourself gently.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And so that, for you to actually be able to give yourself permission to calm down and not freak out over something, you had one of the calmest, most in control freakouts that I know of. Because it was like you decided, okay, I'm going to freak out about this. Hang on. Let me set my watch.
We cried a lot.
It wasn't fake or contrived. It was just that you wouldn't allow anything that wasn't at least pseudo controlled. Mm-hmm. Because anytime you'd done that in the past, you'd been hurt.
Consequences.
When you just allowed things. And so, I can't do that at all. And so shaping through that was huge with your parents, both of them in different ways. It was the kind of woman your mom was versus the kind of guy that your dad was. Those kinds of things, and you reconciling them in your mind, and then even reconciling those two things with the extended family around that to your heart.
Yeah.
That was 3 years just to get to a starting spot.
Yeah, it's true.
If I think about that right, I know it was at least two, but I'm thinking it was at least 3 years to get to a spot where you could have a minor interaction with either of them. Mm. Yeah. And it not be months of work just to get back to where you started.
I think my mom could still sometimes be there, because we haven't talked in 10 years.
Yeah.
My dad is a lot better now. I can.
Right.
And I always think one of the biggest changes of this process is I hated confrontation then.
Okay, there we have it. That was part one. We're going to continue this conversation next week for part two. But I have to be honest, there were so many times that I just wanted to cry, because we were doing it through a Zoom so we could see each other face to face. And he lives, like he explains in this interview together, that we live hundreds of miles away from each other. And he doesn't have that availability to travel and vice versa. And, especially just being able to put his arm around me and hug me and tell me it's going to be okay. So seeing his face during our Zoom time together, I just wanted to cry many times. It's that overwhelming feeling of love, because I know somebody out there might not have had the best example of love. But I am praying into your life now, whether it's a spiritual father or a spiritual mom or somebody to come into your path that will guide you, encourage you, and speak hard truth to you when you need it the most. I would love to hear your takeaways from this episode and this part one of this lie, I'll never get through it. Have you ever believed this lie yourself? I love to know, by you just leaving a review on the podcast or coming to see me over on Instagram @JessicaHoddle. So until next week, I'll talk to you soon.